This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Norris. A tradition now, commentator Bailey White's Thanksgiving Day story.
It was Thanksgiving evening, that sweetly peaceful time after the dishes are washed and put away and the turkey soup is simmering on the back of the stove, when Sally's husband Dave told her that their marriage felt like a snake around his neck and he wanted a divorce. It took Sally completely by surprise. She just sat there for a long time staring at the first camellia in a glass dish on the dining room table, a white emperor. Finally, she said in a tiny, feeble voice, "What kind of snake?" That sent Dave into a little raging fit. He stomped around the living room, punching the upholstered furniture with his fist. "That's exactly what I mean," he yelled at Sally in a high-pitched, angry voice. "I'm trying to tell you how I feel. I'm talking about my feelings, and all you want to know is, what kind of snake?" It was all so fast and unexpected, Sally couldn't think or feel anything. Each breath she took seemed to leave a little empty space at the bottom of her lungs that she couldn't quite fill. She just sat there and said over and over, "Dave, Dave." Finally, Dave sat down on a side chair against the wall, and without looking at Sally, he told the story of how he'd been drinking a cup of coffee at the Java Hut when a young man walked by with a huge snake draped around his shoulders. The snake was so long he had to make two loops, and so heavy that you could see a droop in the young man and a lag in his step. Then Dave started to cry. The thought had come to him all at once, he said, out of the blue. "That's exactly how I feel in my marriage." All Sally could think of was the other time she'd seen that same look of ragged desperation in Dave's eyes and how she might comfort him. But when she reached out to him, he shrank back, and they just sat for a minute staring at each other, miserable and helpless. "I need time," Dave said. "I just need to be by myself to think things out. We'll decide what to do after the holidays." Sally's sister Alice met her at the door wearing a googly-eyed red-nosed reindeer sweater with her arms full of a bundle of blinking white lights. Through all the twinkling, Sally could see the picturesque clutter of the beginnings of Christmas in the background. Tissue paper-lined boxes, heaps of greenery and red berries, Santa Claus, a gingerbread house, three papier-mâché wise men, and a hand-carved camel tipped over on its side. In the middle of it all, her niece Lauren was lounging gracefully in a nest of Bride magazine, staring with alarm at Sally, her eyes wide and her jaw dropped open, just like a nutcracker. "Sally," said Alice, "it's 11:30 at night." "Let me in," said Sally. "Dave wants a divorce." And the next thing she knew, she was drinking hot cider out of a Santa Claus mug, and Alice was firing questions at her. "Did you? Were there? How long?" "No," said Sally. "No, no." "Did you have a fight? Was there someone else?" "No, no," said Sally. "Was there abuse? Verbal abuse?" "Sally, did he hit you?" "No," said Sally, "he only hit the sofa." Had you been having, and she glanced furtively at Lauren, "personal difficulties of any kind?" On her sweater, Rudolph's eyes wobbled with horror in their plastic sockets. "No," said Sally, "Dave just said our marriage was cold, dead weight on his shoulders like a snake." "Oh, my darling," Alice said, and she hugged Lauren protectively cheek to cheek. "You shouldn't be hearing these things. We all need to go to bed and think about this in the morning when we're fresh." Alice's guest room was perfectly designed for peaceful slumber, but Sally could not sleep. She lay down on the bed, stared at the ceiling, and counted up all the years she'd been married to Dave. The first few fumbling years, setting up house together, then the years of comfortable routine, then those miserable 2 years when Dave quit his job at R&R Roofing to train bird dogs. They and all those dogs had had to live on her teacher's salary while Dave tried to make a go of it. But just like everybody had told him in the beginning, the plantations had their own dog men, and after 2 years, Dave had had to sell the dogs and crawl back to R&R with his tail between his legs and nothing to show for it but the concrete and chain-link dog runs in the backyard filling up with leaves. That was when she'd first seen that look in Dave's eyes she'd seen tonight. But 2 years later, Mr. Randolph retired and they made Dave a partner at R&R. Then they had had Addie for those joyful 4 years, not knowing what was to come. Many marriages cannot survive the death of a child, the counselors had told them, but they had survived. It seemed like the hard part must be over. What had gone wrong, and what should she have done about it? Sally got up and sat in the fluffy chair by the window. She stared at the wall and thought about the first time she'd ever seen Dave. He was putting a sheet metal roof on the lunchroom of the school where she was a new teacher. His hair shone just like gold in the gleam from the roof, and he wore his nail apron slung low across his hips like Matt Dillon wore his holster in Gunsmoke. The first time Dave ever spoke to her, Elvis Presley was singing, "I Can't Help Falling in Love with You" on the jukebox at the Ship Ahoy. Dave looked over at her from the bar. "Howdy," he said. Sally had been embarrassed to look at him because she felt like everybody in the Ship Ahoy could surely tell Elvis Presley was singing that song just for her. It must show. Sally drank all the water in the little pitcher by the bedside. It must have been a boa constrictor, she thought. She crept down the hall to the bathroom and then downstairs to the encyclopedias on the bottom shelf of the bookcase. "All snakes are carnivorous and as a rule take living prey only," she read. "Many swallow their victims alive. Others first kill it by smothering it between the coils of their body. The prey is always swallowed entire, and as its girth exceeds that of the snake, the progress of deglutition is very laborious and slow." Sally went back upstairs and crawled into bed. Certainly their marriage wasn't like it used to be, she thought. But was it supposed to be like that after all this time? Wasn't there supposed to be a lag and a droop in a marriage after 33 years? It was nearly 6 o'clock when she closed her eyes and remembered the turkey carcass she'd left simmering on the back of the stove. Would Dave think to turn it off? Then she was smelling coffee and hearing Alice and Lauren murmuring in the kitchen the ding-ding of the timer and the drone of the dishwasher, all the little happy sounds of a modern household beginning to stir. The Rudolph sweater was gone, and Alice was wearing serious clothes this morning, a black linen sheath and a brown silk jacket. She poured coffee and said, "I've been thinking." She got the sugar bowl and the cream and napkins. She sat down, then got back up and reached for saucers. "I've been thinking," she said. "If Dave is leaving you, then Dave should be the one to leave." "But I'm the one with family," said Sally. "Dave doesn't have anywhere to go." Alice glanced at Lauren. Then she jumped up and got 3 spoons. "This is such a busy time for us," she said. "It's the holiday season, and Brian is coming in tomorrow, then the wedding in February. Christmas is a time for loving, happy, family feelings. You can't be feeling very happy right now, Sally. We thought it might be easier for everybody if you stay with Aunt Ethel until you work things out." Aunt Ethel was an efficiency expert, famous for her rat trap histories and her lifelong total time records. She hated waste, sloth, and sloppiness. For Aunt Ethel, making a cup of coffee was an exercise in motion-mindedness. Reach, grasp, use, return. There was not a wasted movement. With one hand, she poured coffee into 2 cups and rinsed the pot, while with the other, she opened a little pocket door in the wall and tossed the coffee grounds out onto the compost heap. There was a gurgling sound as the rinse water trickled out through a series of pipes and tubing onto a new bed of lettuces. Less than 24 hours ago, I had a whole married life with a husband and a house and a freezer full of food, and now all I do is sit in other people's kitchens and drink coffee, said Sally. Aunt Ethel sat, a little hard stump of a woman gripping her coffee cup in both hands while Sally told it again, quicker this time. The peaceful Thanksgiving evening, then Dave wanting a divorce out of nowhere, the snake at the Java hut, the sleepless night remembering Elvis Presley at the Ship Ahoy, and then in the morning Alice busy with Lauren's wedding and Brian coming and the house so full of magi. So that's why I'm here with you, Aunt Ethel, for no telling how long. What kind of snake was it? Asked Ethel. No, 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 said Sally. It's not about snakes. It's about feelings. We're supposed to be thinking about feelings. And maybe Dave is right. 33 years ago, it was Elvis Presley at the Ship Ahoy, and now it's just a turkey carcass left too long on simmer. Ethel sat, her eyes little slits of concentration, thinking. Then she said, life is like work and consists of motions in sequence. You must use the momentum built up during one operation to power the next. There didn't seem to be any need to discuss it further after that, so they started to decorate the Christmas tree. Ethel set the timer. It used to take me nearly 35 minutes to decorate the tree, she said, but then I came up with this. It was a block of wood with an 18-penny nail driven through it. Ethel laid the Christmas tree on its side, and with a couple of whacks, she punched the tip of the nail into the butt end of the tree trunk. She stood the tree up at the edge of the porch, climbed the steps, and clipped the end of a string of lights to the top of the tree with a clothespin. Watch this, she said. This takes 10 minutes off the total decorating time. She gave the tree a little shove, and it spun slowly on the nail, twirling the string of lights evenly from top to bottom. Open the door, said Ethel, and she stood the tree up in the corner, plugged in the lights, and stepped back. The tree leaned a little to the right. Now that is just beautiful, said Ethel. She checked the time and noted it in her book. I've got Christmas down to about 45 minutes total time, she said, and that counts dragging the tree out to the street, winding up the lights, and getting it all back up into the attic. Life is like work and consists of motions in sequence, Ethel had said. But Sally did not feel that she was moving with purpose, but as if she were wandering around aimlessly, lost in an odd parenthetical stretch of time, removed from before and after. At school, everything was swept up into Christmas. Silver glitter, Elmer's glue, up on the housetop, silent night, and all the eager children crazed by anticipation and advertisement. Then it was all merry, merry, and happy, happy, the first cold snap and the last day of school. Now is when the rats move in, said Ethel, and she got out her old blue horse notebook of rat trap histories and her collection of wire traps, funnel traps, and trap door traps. In the long evenings, as they sat in the glow of the Christmas tree, Ethel would oil the hinges in the traps and talk about rats. And Sally would stare into the fire and think about her married life. In her head, she worked out little exercises in terrifying arithmetic. 33 years. She'd probably been married to Dave longer than the years she had left to live. It is a wonderful rat, the pack rat, Ethel said. Strong, wily, vigorous, with a keen intelligence. And the most destructive rat known to man. She leafed through her notebook. In February of 1965, in 1 3-hour period between 2 and 5 a.m., a single rat completely destroyed the wiring in your Uncle M's new Dodge. And on December 30th, 1972, a rat chewed the bottom corner off a heart pine door, got into a closet, and shredded a Navajo blanket, 2 down quilts, and a wedding dress. What a fascinating creature an old marriage is, Sally thought. From its little squirming beginning all those years ago at the ship Ahoy, it had changed over time into this highly evolved being. Buffeted by the demands of married life, useful traits had been selected for, modified, and strengthened. Dave's sultry sluggishness that had been so attractive in courtship had been honed by need into an admirable stoic patience. And what had been in her youth a nearsighted preoccupation with detail had turned into a useful efficiency that they both counted on. Other traits of diminishing usefulness, like that Elvis Presley falling in love, were almost gone, hardly noticeable now, but still there in a way, like the little vestigial leg bones embedded in the body wall of a whale. And here their marriage was today, after all those adaptive shifts, a funny-looking old thing, surely with splayed toes and eyes on the top of its head, but elegantly suited to its ecological niche. What could Dave be thinking, Sally said to herself. A divorce in such a marriage would be like the extinction of a species. Late that night, Sally heard a thump, an anticipatory pause, then another thump, and a pause, then three in a row, thump, thump, thump. From the far side of the house, she could barely hear the response. Thump, 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 thump. The rats had moved in. The next day, Ethel baited and set out the traps. "These rats are nobody's fool," she said. And sure enough, that afternoon it turned gray and dismal. A mean rain fell until dark, and the temperature dropped 40 degrees. "This is just like the first freeze of 1950, said Ethel. "This will be a good year for trapping rats." Just before midnight, Sally heard the rustling sound, a tentative testing, a soft nudge on metal, then the flap of the trap door and the panic scrambling. The lights came on, and there was Ethel, wild-eyed and triumphant in her chaotic floral bathrobe with her white hair shoved up both sides of her head. "Look at that," she said, tilting the trap so the rat ran up the side. "A big bull rat. Look at that coat. Look at the gleam in his eye. The size of him." She looked at the rat, and the rat looked at her. "I don't think I've ever caught a finer-looking rat." "We have to turn him loose way out from civilization," said Ethel. "A rat like this can travel 10 miles in a day and destroy an entire household in one night. You drive. We've got to go a long way, and I don't see too good at night." She put the rat trap on the back seat and covered it with an old sheet. "For his privacy," she said. And they drove off through the empty, silent streets. They drove through the downtown with the swags of colored lights across the street. They drove past the park with all the trees outlined in white lights. There were no other cars out in this cold at this hour, and it seemed as if all this show had been put on just for them, Ethel, Sally, and the rat. "There's my street," said Sally, and without thinking she turned and drove past the Harlan's tired old reindeer, past the Shaws, who always put up just the one string of lights on the eaves of the porch, and past the Stewarts, who'd gone wild a few years back when the icicle lights first came out. "Look," said Sally, "the lamp is on in the living room. Dave must still be up. No Christmas decorations. Poor Dave, his heart wouldn't be in it. Look at him. There he is, sitting in his easy chair with his cowboy hat on." "Why in the world is he wearing that big black cowboy hat," said Ethel, "in the house and this late at night?" "Well, I guess just like me, Dave can't sleep," said Sally. "Look a there," said Ethel. "Who is that little girl?" From the direction of the bedroom, a young woman came into view. She came up behind the chair, and with one hand she slid the hat off Dave's head, leaned over the back of his chair, and a cascade of bright hair hid their kiss. Sally just sat there with the engine idling, staring. It was like watching something shameful on television where no matter how much you know you should, you just can't make yourself turn it off. "That's not a little girl," said Sally. That's the red-haired woman who mixes paint at the Ace Hardware. She watched Dave's hand slide down the side of the chair and fumble for the handle, and then with one smooth stroke, as if he were easing the gear shift lever of a fine automobile into overdrive, he slid the chair into full recline. The black cowboy hat fell on the floor. Chuck Brinson told Dave one time he looked just like Ted Turner in that cowboy hat, said Sally. Then, just like Christmas lights, thoughts came on in Sally's head, twinkling, twinkling. Just as one went off, another came on. Why, she's no older than Lauren, one thought twinkled. Then, she's the same age I was all those years ago at the Ship Ahoy, lit up and was gone. There was a twinkle, and Dave was on the roof of the lunchroom with the gleam of the sheet metal lighting up his golden hair. Another twinkle, and there was Dave in a field of broom sedge hollering whoa to a long-legged dog named Leroy. One more twinkle, and they were in the emergency room with Addie. Then there was nothing left but Dave in his easy chair and the red-headed girl from Ace draping herself over him. All the twinkling lights were gone, and instead there was just a comforting darkness and a wonderful weightless feeling, as if all this time up until right now that snake had been on her shoulders. "Give me that rat," Sally said, and she stepped out of the car, opened the back door, and slid the trap out. Straight, tall, and strong, she strode up the front walkway between the liriope borders, knelt down at the camellia hedge, and lifted the trap door. The rat, confused and disoriented, scrabbled against the back of the trap for just a second. Then he righted himself, made a brief assessing pause, and darted out of the trap. Across the strip of lawn he ran, sleek and fast, and disappeared under the white emperor camellia at the corner of the front steps.
Bailey White lives in southern Georgia.